Radio. Right now in the studio with me, Kathy Dunnell with Utah State Parks. Good morning.
Good morning. So just remember, at all our state parks, the day use fee applies year-round, and many of the parks have reduced their entrance fees in the wintertime, so make sure you check the signs. Most of the campsites are between $20 and $30 at this time of year. Over at Deer Creek, DWR has recently planted thousands of rainbows in Deer Creek. Water is off in the park in the campgrounds, but there's pit restrooms available in each area. Camping is first come, first serve with electric and sewer at the sites. Water is available near the main entrance of the park. The main ramp and the island boat ramps are open until the reservoir freezes. Only the wedge docks remain in the water at this time. Boaters need to continue to display the AIS form for quagga mussel on their dashboards as per state law. Vessels that need to be decontaminated on weekdays must make an appointment. Staff is available to assist weekends from 8 a.m. to dusk. Last decontamination is 30 minutes before dusk. At Wasatch Mountain State Park, the day use areas are open from dawn till dusk every day. The visitor center is open every day except Thanksgiving, Christmas Day, and New Year's Day. Cottonwood Campground is still open for first come, first serve and will close mid-November. The cabins and group areas are open year-round. The Lake Golf Course at Wasatch and the Silver Course at Soldier Hollow are still open. They will remain open until Thanksgiving or unless the snow shuts them down. For reduced golfing prices this fall, please visit the website. 2019 golf passes go on sale November 23rd. Remember that hunting is allowed in the park. Hunters have to be 600 feet away from trailheads, facilities, and golf courses, but people can hunt on trails. And Wasatch has a lot of winter activities starting December 13th with the Avalanche class. Be sure to check out the Wasatch Facebook page or the website for the whole schedule. At Jordanelle, two campgrounds remain open on a first-come, first-served basis until the snow comes. Camping will be allowed during the winter months in the marina parking lot, but you must be self-contained. The restrooms at the top of both ramps will remain open and heated. There will also be two CXT restrooms in the day use areas. The water level has been dropping. The ramps at Hailstone are still in the water. The Courtesy and Wedge Dock is still at the main ramp. The PWC ramp only has the wedge dock in. The ramp at Rockcliff is out of the water and launching of any size boat is not recommended. Construction on the non-motorized boat ramp and trail access at Ross Creek is completed but not yet open to the public. Fishing has been good from boats. Free day use for veterans November 11th and 12th as it is the observed holiday. Right now at Rockport, it's a great time to view wildlife, especially deer. The water at Juniper Campground has been turned off. The Riverside Campground at Rockport is closed for the season. The 3D Archery Range has been closed for the season. Currently, fishing is picking up from the shore using worms and green-yellow power bait. Check the website for info about the tagged fishing contest coming up this winter. And at East Canyon, Dixie Campground, Large Springs, and Mormon Flats Campground are still open for the season. Big Rock, River's Edge Campground are now closed. Trails are open. Yurts and cabins are open year-round, and you can still make reservations for those facilities. Boating docks are out, but the wedge docks are in. Fishing has been excellent from boat and shore. The annual tagged fish contest is in full swing and will run till December 29th. Register at Eventbrite. For more information, please contact the park. And remember, the website for state parks is stateparks.utah.gov. Annual passes are a great Christmas gift. And if you're planning for next year, you can reserve campsites 4 months in advance or group sites 11 months in advance at reserveamerica.com.
Okay. Kathy, see you next month. Thank you.
Thank you.
KPCW News 819, good morning. Well, on Tuesday, voters returned Summit County Councilmember Glenn Wright to another four-year term on the council. Although he was running unopposed, he did face a last-minute write-in challenge from Josh Mann. Glenn joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning, Leslie. Can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
I can. I'm in my car outside of the cutting board in Camas right now because we're having a conversation with the council morning. So let me start off. If there's anybody in the Camas, Francis, Oakley area who'd like to come speak to us in person, we'll be here until 9 o'clock.
Okay. Hey, did you feel like you had to campaign when Josh Mann announced his write-in candidacy?
I did, and I went out and campaigned. It was actually a positive experience. It's good to have conversations on issues during a campaign, so it forced me to get online, you know, create a website, go out and knock on doors, speak at community events, and it's something we should be doing every election. And I salute Josh for filing as a write-in because it made me work a little harder.
Josh still received about 1,000 votes. I mean, what does that mean, that you've got 1,000 people unhappy with what you're doing, or?
Oh, I guess so.
I mean, it's significant for a write-in campaign, I guess, is my thought.
Oh, actually, I was expecting significantly more than that. But like I said, it did give us a good chance to actually discuss the issues.
All right. What goals or objectives do you have then for the next 4 years?
The main reason I wanted to stay on the council for another 4 years is to promote our renewable energy and carbon footprint issues. And I've also been working heavily on the forest fire protection issues with the National Forest Rangers.
All right. Let's move to that then, taking a look at the agenda. What do you think about joining the governor's roadless rule petition effort?
We had some good discussions about that last night, and I think we're all a little concerned about the overall state direction there and what they want to accomplish. A little bit afraid that some of the other counties really want to essentially rip up the roadless rule. We have different opinion on it, and at least four of us do that. We want to create some restoration areas in our part of the National Forest because of all the damage that has occurred from beetle kill up there, and the drying climate, the warming climate is causing much higher forest fire issues for the county. We're very concerned about protecting the watershed, and if you look at what's happened in some very large forest fires, the debris flow after those fires could have just catastrophic consequences on some of our communities. I would be particularly concerned in the Oakley and Camas area with the debris runoff, and it's actually something we very casually discussed as a potential large issue for a emergency operations center plan.
Well, you're someone who's been closely following the need to clear out the dead timber in the forest. Do you believe this is a ploy to take back federal land?
I believe in some counties they would like to have a much higher access for commercial timbering operations. It's not really taking back the land, because the land will all remain under the jurisdiction of the Forest Service, but there are some counties I know that want more liberal usage in their sections of the forest.
So this green program called CPACE, it seems something being promoted through the governor's office to provide some private financing for commercial industrial buildings to pay for sustainable features. What does the county do to facilitate this?
Well, what we have to do is pass a resolution supporting it. And then pretty much the governor's office of economic or energy development will take over all of the regulatory issues on it. And we just really put in place a resolution authorizing it to take place in Summit County.
In the end, the council did not approve this agreement. Is it that you just wanted to refine the details, or?
Yes. Yeah, this was a work session, and typically we like to discuss it in work session first and then come up and have actually pass the resolution at a later meeting, where we've had time to mull it over a little bit, and we had opportunity for anybody from the public to weigh in on it. This is a common policy for us. We very rarely will have a work session and enabling resolution at the same time.
The council also approved the $500,000 grant to help buy the conservation easement on the Oscarthorpe Ranch. Why did it take so long to work out this agreement?
Well, in my nearly 2 years on the council, what I'm finding is that any kind of land use negotiation takes a long time. We went back and forth with the Oscarthorpes and Summit Land Conservancy for quite a while, and I think we're all happy now with the results of our conversation.
And what do residents get out of it in terms of public access?
There will be very little public access to this land. This land is an agricultural preservation agreement, and it's basically just to take development rights off the land so there will never be a housing development there, but the Oscarthorpe family can continue to farm the property. And that's one of the reasons why it took us so long, because we have two pots of money that we can use for this purpose, and one of them does require recreational access, which we didn't think was going to be appropriate for this particular land use.
Okay, so where does this pot of money come from?
Like I said, we have two pots of money. One comes that is purely open space, and it can be passive open space like this. And the other pot, which is much bigger, it's a result of bonds from Snyderville Basin Rec that does require recreational nexus for any kind of transaction.
At one point, the county wanted to link this to an agreement with the Oscarthorpes about their property there along Highway 224. So is that also kind of water under the bridge, or is there something still working forward with that?
That was part of our initial discussions more than a year ago, but that just didn't come to fruition.
All right. And then during public comment, you heard from Ed Rattan with Connect Summit County. One of the nonprofits notified that it wouldn't be receiving grant money because of the county's funding of the Children's Justice Center. He said, well, he supports the Justice Center. He felt that there should also be funding to others that provide essential services like Connect. Where are you standing on this issue?
Where we're standing on this issue is the budget's not final yet. We won't finalize the budget till likely the second meeting in December. And we're going to have further discussions on this. I think there's some feeling amongst the council that there are some activities that we can fund. In the past, that pot of money totaled about $100,000 for all of the county charities that were applying for grants. I suspect what we're going to be doing over the next about 4 to 5 weeks is deciding how to proceed on that. And one of the thoughts that has come out is that local 501c3s can approach various departments within the county and say, this is a service that we can provide for you that's in your nexus of responsibilities, and we'd like some funding for this particular project. And I think that will probably be the new direction. And like I said, we'll be having continuing discussions about this over the next several weeks.
All right. Anything else you wanted to add, Glenn?
No, I think I said, I will reiterate, we're out here at the cutting board in Camas, and if you're in the local area, we would love to have you come in and talk to us face to face.
Okay. You got anybody out there yet?
We've had a number of people come through.
Great.
Mayor Ames from Francis is here also, and we've had a few local citizens come in and talk about various issues, and that's what we're here for.
Okay, appreciate it.
Doug Clyde from the county council is here also, as well as several people from the county staff. Margaret Olson's here. I saw Jeff Jones, Derek Radke, Andrew Wright from the Sheriff's Department. I probably missed a few already also, but come on out.
Okay, appreciate you stepping away to talk to us. That's
no problem, Leslie. I prefer doing it in person in the studio, but we had a lot of council conflicts this morning.
Okay. That's Summit County Council member Glenn Wright. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. 8:30 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, at the end of the third quarter, housing statistics are showing a slowing demand and an increase in median sales price. In the studio with an overview of our local real estate market, I have the president of the Park City Board of Realtors, Todd Anderson. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I've heard about this slowing demand from a handful of realtors. What does that look like specifically as opposed to just personal impressions?
Specifically, it looks, you start to see the unit volume fall off a little as far as the number of sales is starting to fall just slightly. And at that same time, we're still seeing the median sales price moving up. But that fall in the sales price also, you know, gets us an increase in the inventory coming on. As inventory is coming on and not as much as falling off, we're seeing an increase in the inventory levels. So a little more to choose from, which can do us well, too.
Okay, I thought we were reporting increased median sales price.
Increased median sales price, okay. Yes, but a decrease in the unit in the number of units selling.
Yeah, so 4.5% for single family homes, 9% for condominiums compared to the same time last year.
Yeah, and you get some things in there. You know, our sample sizes tend to run small enough that we can have a development come in Empire Pass and say and sold everything that was pre-sold, and all of a sudden the numbers jump way up. So you have to be really careful as you look at some of these fluctuations from quarter to quarter, even as it can have an impact that maybe isn't significant in the whole marketplace.
Yeah. So you don't think prices have put things out of reach for folks?
I don't think so, but and that's a question mark as you look. And I think we have to stand back oftentimes and look at the whole country and say that really, you know, as we look at us versus a national basis, we're tracking a little slower than the rest as far as the increases in prices, us versus the rest of the country.
We have certainly heard about people wanting to know what happened with Tuesday's bond election before they proceeded with any purchases. I mean, and the three that I had heard about was that they wanted either the Snow Ranch parcels purchased, saved, and Treasure, a couple of those people. So maybe we see an upswing, given that that's behind us, or?
You know, anytime you have these question marks out there, anytime you have uncertainty, that definitely slows people from doing things. And I think as you get into, you know, what people are buying, views are very important. And so if there's a question mark about the view, it's either going to change the value price of it, or it's going to slow down people jumping into it. So I think as we move beyond those question marks in people's minds, it can definitely help the market.
The number of single-family home sales within the city limits, relatively flat. The median price, $1.95 million, remained the same. Old Town had the highest number of sales, up 10%. 30% fewer sales in Park Meadows. Is that just because of what's available?
I think it's a little of what's available. I think that Park Meadows has seen some of the larger price increases going into that. There's a huge variation between, you know, the homes on the hillsides viewing back toward Park City and the homes that were built earlier in the 80s. And so oftentimes that's just a cycle on what moved in a given time frame. So right now we've got a lot more, you know, sitting up in that $2 million plus category, and those don't move as fast as those that were built years ago in the flats area. So it's a cyclical move, and it shows the pockets that we have within Park City that really, as we do these deep dives into the statistics, we can get a lot of variances that really, you know, show you why you need to use a local realtor.
The median sales price jumping up 22% in the Snyderville Basin, that's significant, but apparently not stopping people from buying. The basin saw twice the number of sales than we saw here in the city limits.
And that's been something we've been seeing for a while is, the basin area, you know, obviously has a much lower price when you compare it to that 1.2 versus 1.95 on those median sales prices. So it's going to push things out there and tends to be a little friendlier to a commuter coming in and out of Salt Lake than the in-town areas do. But yeah, definitely, you know, seeing that big price bump, kind of threw a lot of us as we looked at the statistics. And But as you mentioned, it really hadn't slowed people down.
Yeah. And again, it's just when you just talk about a few sales, a couple of very expensive homes can really knock that upwards then, huh?
Yeah, you get enough of them in there. And I think that generally costs, as you look at things and look at new construction and the opportunities in other places, those are having an impact on those sales too. We've definitely seen an increase in costs that we hear from the builders, and that just says that, you know, if new ones cost that much more, so will the older ones, the alternative.
Sales in the Heber Valley at a strong pace with, this is hard to believe, nearly one sale a day?
Yeah, there's a lot going on out there. If you look and say, you know, you get down into that valley and it's changing rapidly, and there are things being built everywhere you look. And I think that's another area that shows those increase in building costs, is they had a pretty significant jump in the median sales price there also.
Yeah, like 27%.
Exactly. And that almost lines up exactly from what we're hearing from builders as far as, you know, construction costs.
Yeah. Median sales price, though, at $525,000. So that's where not only the new product is, but some of the more affordable product?
Absolutely. They've still got quite a few things to choose from down there in the, you know, low to mid 200s, but that median price, half above, half below, is definitely jumping up. I think we saw quite a few home sales. Red Ledges saw a dramatic increase in sales going on out there, and I think it has to do with the product coming on.
Okay. What about condominium and townhome sales? What are we seeing there?
Condominium and townhome sales have been a little slower. We're kind of on a wait and see. We have a lot of things that are in the process of being built that are either in a reservation or a pending sales, and we don't see those sales complete until the product's done. So while we're seeing numbers slow down in there, we're seeing also a large number of pending that says, okay, you know, we're still seeing the demand, and it's going to be a little while before we see the actual sales volume jump back up, and I think you'll see at that point also a large increase in pricing.
And what about vacant land sales?
Vacant land sales are a little all over. I mean, as you get into town here, you know, we're almost at a spot where we're not looking at it very much because there's just nothing left to build on. And that's, you know, our vacant land sales are really moving out toward the Jordanelle area. They're moving out toward Camas. We're running out of spots in town to do that. I think you'll see these, a lot of areas fill in the coming years.
Places like Promontory, where there seems like they're going gangbusters.
They're going gangbusters out there. They've got the land to build on, you know, and that's, again, we see those same things in Will all around the Jordanelle as you look toward the Hideout, Touhey areas, same thing on new things coming to us around the Mayflower area.
Yeah, and still the same for Silver Creek as well. We still have lots of land to build there?
Not lots of land to build in Silver Creek anymore. So it's kind of getting picked over, and we saw prices jump up pretty dramatically in Silver Creek. I think because of that, is people who want that space with a little elbow room around them, it's getting harder and harder to find, you know, with the relatively close proximity to town.
Okay. Anything else, Todd, you wanted to mention?
Just came back from the National Association of Realtors convention in Boston. We should see some great things coming out of the National Association with their new Commitment to Excellence program, and I think it'll hopefully show a little kind of raising the bar for our profession.
Such as ethics training, or I mean, what do you? What
it's yeah. It's ethics. It's more rounded than that. It's actually a 10-point program that you go in. That's a self-paced for an agent to be able to go in on their own and kind of learn what they're good at and what they aren't, and to be able to focus on things. So it's a neat new program we'll see from them, and it'll be interesting going forward to see how well it's picked up. I think we'll see a lot of agents in our area really jump into it and have another badge to hang on their name there.
So it's not like it's required training, it's just another it's acronym after their name?
It's going to be that piece, again, that separates you from somebody else. So I think that's, you know, a lot of people look toward that, and I think it as we watch the national end do some things with it, I think it'll be very interesting.
Okay. Hey, Tom. Right. See you next month or so.
All right, thanks.
All right. Todd Anderson is the president of the Park City Board of Realtors. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, on Monday, the Park City Film Series will be screening a World War II drama, A Midnight Clear. Parts of the film filmed right here in Park City. In the studio from Park City Museum, I have Sandra Morrison Also joining me, Margaret Hilliard, a production manager of the film, and Bill Borden is on the phone. He was the producer of the film. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Sandra, let's start with you and just give us a few more details of the screening. You're pairing up with the film series then to show this?
Right. It's the Park City Museum and the film series, and the film will start at 7 o'clock. I think it runs 108 minutes, and then afterwards we're going to have a panel discussion with question and answer. And so some of the crew, Lee Von Der Esch, who is the location manager, from the Film Commission, will be there. And then Bill Borden's flying in to join us as well on the panel. So it should be an interesting discussion to stay for.
Okay. It's free screening or is there
yes,
a concert?
Yes, free skiing. Yep. Free okay. screening.
All right. Well, Bill, can you talk to us a little bit about why Utah was chosen to film a story about the Battle of the Bulge?
Because we needed snow, and we couldn't go to Europe to film. So when I was looking around, I was familiar with Utah because of Park City and skiing up there. And I just thought it would be a great place to go scout, and we actually found, which is now the canyons, an empty canyon. Margaret, was it called Silver Canyon at the time? Or
it's
Silver?
White Pine Canyon. It's now the Colony.
White Pine Canyon. Yes. And we found a really beautiful area that we could build a French chateau and also have accessibility to crew. So being in Park City, we could draw from crew from Salt Lake. And actually, there was a lot of crew in Park City at that time, too. And we could build our chateau. And then, coincidentally, where they're going to screen the film, which is the old high school, was closed and not quite abandoned at that time, but that we used as the interior for our chateau. So it worked out really great.
Yeah, so White Pine Canyon was the stand-in for the Ardennes Forest then, huh?
That's
right.
Correct.
And it was easy enough because it was kind of a small-scale production in that term. You didn't have any big battle scenes or anything to film, huh?
Well, we actually brought in tanks and jeeps, and it wasn't about the big battle. It was really about a very personal battle. Personal moment in the Battle of the Bulge between a group of only about less than about a dozen Americans and Germans, and then there is a moment where the Battle of the Bulge or the larger group rolls in, which was just basically we filmed that in one day. But most of our story, 95% of our story, is a very personal one about how war is personal, and it is one-on-one. So it's not about big things and big movements and big explosions. It's really about the emotions of what's going on during the war.
Yeah, and the kids, they are kids. They're, teenagers, young 20s maybe. I mean, very young children, really.
Right. Well, we took advantage. We had some great, we kicked off a lot of careers. Ethan Hawke, Pete Berg, Ari Gross, we started their careers when they were young on this movie.
Yeah. As Bill mentioned, Sandra, the characters hole up in this deserted chateau, which we now know as the Park City Library. It was known as the Carl Winters Building back then. I mean, it was basically unused, pretty much gutted out, I think, at the time. Can you talk to us a little bit about what happened to the building between its years as the high school and then,
the
library?
The school district owned the building, and it was the high school built in the 19-teens and was high school for decades. And as Park City grew with the ski economy, they built the new high school that we're still using today, and they turned the building into a middle school. It actually hadn't had a middle school. The City Hall building was the primary school at the time, and so called it Carl Winters after the school superintendent, who had actually started working in the school district in the 30s, so really long tenured school superintendent in Park City. And then they built the Treasure Mountain Middle School, and this was the 1990s, and didn't have a use for the building, so basically boarded it up, and it was sitting there. And at one point, the city, purchased it from the school district. But when the, film came to town, it didn't have a use, so it was perfect.
It was abandoned.
Yeah. Did you use all three floors?
Yes, we did. We filmed in what is now the library, was the gymnasium. the first level, street level, we turned into a hospital, and the auditorium we turned into the attic of the chateau.
Yeah. Did you use any other locations in Utah?
Yes, we did quite a lot around Old Ranch Road and all around the Park City area.
Yeah, couldn't get away with that now, huh?
Nope.
I guess we should also note...
And funnily enough, I just actually filmed at Park City. I filmed up by Echo. We located in Park City, but filmed up by Echo. So you have to move further out to do any filming outside Park City now.
All right. And we didn't have a big film production studio back then either. We should note that you filmed this winter, which Rick Bruff reminds me was incredibly cold. Did that provide, give you any challenges to deal with that you recall?
Of course it did. But, it was funny. The Utah crew was used to it in some ways. They all showed up and they were ready to do it. And I think it was a wonderful challenge. But I think they were not challenged as much as maybe Margaret and myself, who come from
Flatlanders.
Do you recall it being pretty darn cold?
Absolutely, especially after the sun went down at about 5. It was brutal up there.
Yeah.
And we had some.
Well,
night,
what was the
night
name of our transportation captain? He used to wear shorts every day.
Fleet Eklund?
Yeah, it was Fleet. He wore shorts, remember?
Oh, jeez. Well, many of us remember having to replace our car batteries. Did that provide any challenges for you as well? I mean, just having to run equipment or?
Yes. And we had a base camp that was on the White Pine Canyon Road where we had the makeup and hair and catering. And it was a pretty rough place.
Yeah. So how did the picture ultimately do then in the theaters?
Over the period of time, financially, the picture did fine. It started slow, but it was one of those movies at that time where we were lucky enough that the system allowed it to play out over months. And Tom Rosenberg, who was the financier, told me, who I just ran into recently, and he said, yeah, the movie turned a profit eventually. So that's great.
Good. Okay, again, it's an opportunity to see a Midnight Clear on the big screen at the Jim Sandy Auditorium Monday night. Anything else? Any thoughts you'd like to add?
Well, I've made about 39 feature films or movies, and still my favorite.
Wow, that's saying something.
It was a fantastic experience, that film.
Okay. Yeah. And you've seen it?
No, I haven't, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Okay.
And we're expecting a lot of the crew to come. And, of course, with the World War II theme, it's a great film to show on Veterans Day. So Monday, November 12th at 7 o'clock, free screening.
Okay. Sandra, Margaret, and Bill, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Great.